The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Now to look at the week trending, we're joined by Breida Brown, PR Director for Unique Media, and Owen McDermott, Director of the Communications Clinic. Breida, earlier in the week we did an item on a new health study in relation to vaping. Not as dangerous as cigarette smoking, tobacco smoking, obviously, but perhaps not as safe as has been suggested. So should people have objections to others vaping where they are in the workplace or even in restaurants and pubs, as people sometimes do?
I would. I feel sort of quite strongly about that, I suppose. Yes, there's a new report out from the UK saying people should be allowed to vape in offices, buses and on trains. But, you know, I don't really want to be sitting beside somebody who has this quite a large implement in their hand, nearly looks like a test tube from a science lab, and they're puffing on it constantly. But also the amount of steam, I know it's vapor, but the amount of steam that's coming out of it, if you've ever seen it, it's like a plume of smoke that's over them. And a number of my colleagues were actually saying to me earlier on today that now you can get flavored vapors, vaping devices where there's mint or there's chocolate, so there's other flavours going on. So I was sort of going, sounds a bit weird. But also the toxin element, we really actually probably don't know what's in them. And is there scientific evidence? You know, a lot of this call for vaping in public places is based on oral evidence and anecdotal evidence as opposed to being really backed up by scientific evidence.
Oh, and would you have an objection to it?
Well, I do. I think there's probably a couple of things. There's still nicotine in e-cigarettes, and nicotine isn't a particularly good thing to be putting into our bodies. What I found interesting was this came from a science and technology committee run by the MPs in the UK. One of the criticisms was they only heard one side of the story. The side that they heard was from the vaping industry, e-cigarette people who promoted it, but also big tobacco. And I thought, why?
Which owns most of these?
That's
companies.
What I found most interesting. So if you find and look at the parent companies of big tobacco, of the vaping companies, British American Tobacco, who own Dunhill and Lucky Strike, Philip Morris, who own Marlboro, they own all of the vaping companies. And I think if you were to look and say, well, they probably were looking at organisationally at their product and saying, okay, one of the threats for us is around vaping, and let's see it as an opportunity and buy it up. So it was no wonder that they were pushing for this. The side that they didn't hear or hear enough of was from the medical experts, who were saying, we simply don't know enough about this. We have no idea. The tests aren't longitudinal to be able to say whether or not this affects us. And as a layperson, I would have thought putting anything into your lungs other than oxygen was probably an unwise thing.
Okay, but the vaping does apparently cause damage to the lungs if you're inhaling it. But if it's secondary smoke, I mean, that was the big change that was made here in Ireland first, and it's essentially gone global. No indoor smoking, workplaces, restaurants, pubs and whatever, because it was such an enormous irritant to other people to find that other people's smoke was affecting them. But surely this smoke, this vaping, is far less hazardous. So why have another prohibition against people who want to do something which is going to have minimal impact on others?
Yeah, but there's lots of things out there that have minimal impact on our health, like roaring and shouting in somebody's face, but we still view that as socially unacceptable. So I think there's that bit, whether that there are health effects or health dangers by somebody vaping beside you. If it is obtrusive to you, if it is getting in your way, and it's a commonly held view and people view it as socially unacceptable, I think that's the way. I think there's probably also a public health thing on by making smoking socially unacceptable, by forcing people out onto the street, there was a behaviour change and a behaviour shift that occurred there as well.
And it's a case of nearly swapping one addiction for another, because anyone I see with these vaping implements seem to have them in their hand constantly. At least with cigarettes, they have one, they put the packet away and then have another later. With these implements, they just seem to hold them all the time. One, I suppose, thing I was thinking about earlier on is, and it's interesting, Owen, what you say about making it socially unacceptable. If you were sitting in your office at 11 o'clock in the morning and somebody was sipping a non-alcoholic beer, would that be socially acceptable, even though there's no damage being done as a result? So therefore, sort of, it's a little bit similar, I think, with cigarettes and smoking.
But a non-alcoholic beer is just like having a soda of some kind, isn't it?
But is that okay, though? You know, so if we equate vaping to the non-alcoholic beer and cigarettes to alcohol, so is it okay to sit there and sip a non-alcoholic beer at 11 o'clock?
If there's no alcohol in it, what harm does it do?
But socially, is that acceptable in an office place?
Well, you see, I think there's that, again, that distinction with the plumes of smoke from the vape. They're in your face, they're getting in your way. And I think that's the issue that I would look at around this piece. And also then the lack of research around, is that having an impact on the person beside you's lungs and their well-being?
Well, actually, another story out of Britain, which is equally relevant here in Ireland, and it's about behaviour of people. Civil Aviation Authority in Britain is looking at the possibility of more prosecutions of drunk passengers, both at airports and on flights. Now, for a lot of people, particularly when they're boarding a flight, they may be nervous and anxious. They want a drink or two to calm them down. For others, it's the start of the holidays. But is it acceptable that people get tanked up before they get on a flight or when they're on a flight?
No, I don't think so, because you have, it impacts on two things. One, the airline crew that are there that have to try and manage it and deal with it and decide at the gate if you are too intoxicated to get on board or not, or they could decide to maybe let you on and then have to deal with the consequences later. But also other people who are on the flight who have paid for their ticket to be there as well, having to put up with this anti-social behaviour. The bigger picture here, really, I suppose, is our relationship with alcohol.
Sorry, hold on one second. The airports and the airlines are forever flogging alcohol to people.
Well, if you look at why they're doing it, there's a huge mark upon it. They can make huge money. And if it's that big an issue for airlines and if it's that big an issue for the airports, they should actually start removing alcohol from everywhere where we see it. Because if you look, barmen in the bars and airports will fill you with as much booze as you like. You then arrive at the gate, you arrive on the flight, they probably will offer you up an alcoholic beverage. So they all are contributing to this behaviour. Doesn't mean that the behaviour is acceptable. It's grossly unacceptable to be acting in a very aggressive, perhaps, or antisocial way in an enclosed space up in the air. I don't think that's a really sensible way of going through it. But contributors to this issue happen to be some of the people who are complaining about it.
No, good point. But again, I suppose it is about the relationship with alcohol as well, in terms of why do we feel the need to go to the airport and be there at 7 o'clock in the morning, 2 hours before our flight, and to have three or four drinks before we get on the plane. I can't associate it with that personally, but a lot of people do. And again, I think it's down to personal responsibility.
But is it down to personal choice? As long as you do no harm to anyone else, should you be allowed to drink as much as you want?
Well, you're allowed to. Well, you should be allowed to drink. Whether you should be allowed to drink as much as you like, that then we've all seen that there are those encounters. Like I found it was interesting that 2% have more than four drinks before that they would go on. Now, that's still a fair amount of travellers. Like if you consider that there was 30 million people went through Dublin last year, that's about 500,000 people who were having more than four drinks. Now you're saying 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 drinks, you would be fairly steamed on the plane, and then your behaviour is slightly out of your own control.
Okay, something else in relation to lifestyle. A lot of people opt for low-carb, high-fat diets. And now a study which has apparently been conducted over 25 years, Breda, suggests that these fashionable diets could knock years off your lifespan. How come? And if they take weight off you, which apparently is one of the things you're supposed to do to live longer.
And this is interesting because it is backed up by fact and by a long-term study over 25 years. So a bit of science going on there. So it's about carbohydrates. And at this point, we are trained nearly to think and believe that we should have a very low carbohydrate diet because that's what contributes to fat. However, what people are doing is they tend to replace carbohydrates with high protein and high fat foods and animal fat foods. So this survey has shown that if you have a low carb diet and you're replacing it with animal fat and high fat, you're actually shortening your life by 4 years. If you have a sort of moderate carbohydrate intake, you will live until you're 83. But if you have a low carb intake, and again, with the animal fats, you're only going to live until you're 79.
Yeah, and there's a fair amount of people done in it. You know, one of the questions you should always ask when research is, what's the sample size? And the sample size is pretty big here. It's 15,000. They've also had found similar trends in other studies of over 430,000. So this is a trend. It doesn't really tell us anything that if we thought about it, we didn't know. Really, a balanced diet is way to go. Absolutely. You've got your five a day. You've got the food triangle. You have all of those things telling you should be eating healthy food.
Five a day out of date
now, the food triangle
completely changed as well. And isn't that the problem? An awful lot of these diets that have been given to us over the years, you know, the so-called healthy ones by the health authorities have been proven to be wrong.
Well, I think if you just look at it, that it's just actually having a good mix within it. So, for example, 8 out of 10 Irish people have a fibre deficit. Now, fibre is, an important part of it. We tend to get gut issues if we don't have enough of it. Like, that's like 8 out of 10 of us don't get enough fibre. Where do we get our fibre from? Vegetables, fruit, legumes. That's the type of food we should be eating. Yes, you can have some protein, but I think we all get too hung up on that protein aspect. Then we're all supporting the Atkins diet and all that madness.
And the other aspect from the media as well is, one day coffee is good for you, the next day it's not. One day red meat is good for you, the next day it's not. And I think Owen is right. Again, it's down to balance. It's down to moderation, but it's also down to personal education in terms of getting inside the actual science of it as opposed to just reading what's
in the
paper.
But hold on, an awful lot of the so-called health experts were saying fat is bad for you. And lots of people replaced fatty meats and stuff like that with carbohydrates and sugars. The real problem is sugar rather than fat.
Mm. Well, yeah, and it depends what type of fats you're talking about. So, for example, there is fats in the
salmon,
type of nuts that you eat, and fish you should be. So, again, there is that thing where we will label something and we just won't do it. I would, again, I'm not a food expert, but I think it's simply saying, look, have you got enough of everything in your diet? And if you do, you should be okay. But if you're banning yourself from carbs, you're not eating spuds and only eating steaks, I don't think that's going to be a great way of doing
it. Okay, some comments coming in from listeners. Why bash people having a drink before a flight? Some people who are afraid of flying find a drink.
No, we didn't bash people, though. Yeah.
Takes the edge off the fear. I'm afraid of flying, but rather a drink than a Xanax or a Valium, says Orla in Dublin 15. Maybe if the airports weren't the most inhospitable places imaginable, people wouldn't feel the need to get drunk before they got on a flight, says a listener.
Maybe, but perhaps you can, you know, we've all been in boring places. There are, you know, you're not there for too long.
Another one says, why is it acceptable to sit and drink pints at 7:30 in the morning in an airport? It makes my stomach turn over. Why is it okay to be loud and obnoxious on an airplane when nobody would tolerate the same behaviour on a bus or in a street? Why is it okay to appear drunk and disgusting in front of children before heading off on a flight, says another listener. Breda, tell us about the Instagram fashion craze, which apparently is leading to what's been called snappy returns.
So, I'm just looking at your outfit, Matt, and I'm just wondering whether you're up to speed.
What do you mean my outfit? All I'm doing is wearing this shirt and jeans.
And it's a lovely shirt and it's a lovely pair of jeans. Yes. However, if you go onto Instagram and you look for a hashtag, which is outfit of the day, or I've been told hashtag OOTD, which is the shortened version of it, there are people out there who basically will take photographs of what they are wearing today and put it up on their social media feeds. Not just millennials, by the way, sort of slightly older people the same. So I think you do have a nice outfit on today. But what's
Thanks
happening
very much.
Is, you're welcome. What's happening is, to keep up with this outfit of the day trend, people just don't seem to have enough clothes or enough money to go off and buy their own clothes. So they end up ordering clothes online, getting it delivered to their house. They put on the outfit, they take a photograph of it, they post the picture, and then they put the outfit back into the box and send it back to the sender.
Oh, yeah, it's the saddest thing, but I think it's all of this thing, this carefully curated profile that people put of themselves up onto whatever social media. And it's this fakery and kind of desire for likes that kind of galls me. There was a really interesting book called Selfie, written by a guy called Will Storr, which did an analysis of all of this. It was kind of the sub thing is, how did we all become self-absorbed? But he had a brilliant line in it that said, we have a self for work, we have a self for home, and then he went on, but he said, we also have a self for Facebook and for Twitter. And a lot of his findings were intuitive. We care about what people think. We want people to like us. We want to appear successful. But it's all of this creation of our own story.
And curated, which, is the key word.
Here's a great WhatsApp. Speaking of returning OOTD, got a River Island delivery yesterday and found that the coat had been worn in the UK. I knew because the train tickets from the person's night out in Cambridge were in the pocket.
That's great.
River Island must be used to it. Weren't a bit concerned. Told me to return at own postal expense. Now, Breda, why are selfie sticks been banned from the Phoenix Park from the Papal Mass, and what else has been banned?
Well, by the looks of it, anybody going to the Phoenix Park is going to have to carry so much anyway that I think the last thing on their mind is going to be selfie sticks. So people have been advised to treat this trip to the Phoenix Park like a pilgrimage. Make sure that you've got good shoes that you can walk 7 kilometres in, because it's going to be about 3.5 kilometres in and 3.5 kilometres out. They're being advised that they need to take adequate food, and water, which they're going to have to carry. And I've been told that rucksacks are going to be allowed. Normally when you go to concerts, they don't allow rucksacks. So we can see that the flask and the Sambos are going to be used. But what's not allowed is aluminium cans, mobility scooters and deck chairs.
I think it's brilliant that selfie sticks have been banned. The more we can ban them, the better. We should actually just ban people from taking photographs of themselves generally. They're not ahead of their time, though, with the guards banning them. I think Disney banned them back in 2015 from Disneyland. Most of the museums in New York have banned them. They're banned in the Palace of Versailles in France. So banning selfie sticks isn't a new thing, but I think it's a great thing.
I don't see them around as much, though, as you would have sort of a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
I really don't.
I think people have realised they don't look particularly cool with it.
I was in New York last week. There were loads of people with selfie sticks all over the place, including in the Met.
Did really?
There you are.
The Met said they banned. We better get on to them.
Okay.
I do find, because our office is quite near St. Patrick's Cathedral, so you'll find an awful lot of the Asian tourists tend to use them more so. I certainly don't see the Americans with them, which is interesting.
Okay, so that's what's banned. Now, the other story, which I think has really got people good, the idea that there's an attempt to free up beds in hospitals in anticipation of an influx of people who will fall ill at the papal mass.
Yeah, well, you would hope that the hospitals aren't going to be turfing people out who are sick. Mm. So the instruction has been...
You certainly would hope that, yes.
Yeah, where medically appropriate. And I think if there is a bed shortage, that you could argue that it is kind of sensible in the planning of it, given that there's going to be 500,000 people at it. There's a certain demographic who are most typically going to be going. They're probably going to be a little bit older, as we've already heard. They're going to be walking a fair distance. If the weather's anyway hot, it'll be warm for them. There's nowhere for them to sit, particularly now that they're banned from being in their deck chairs. So there is a risk that somebody could fall, somebody could get dehydrated, somebody could have heat stroke, somebody who is older may have some age-related illness. So you could argue that there is probably sense to it. You would just hope that people aren't being put out of their beds too soon.
Now, there are a lot of people, though, who are still bringing up issues in relation to the appropriateness of this event because of the Catholic Church's record in relation to child abuse in this country, and now as well, but people who are coming here for this Congress of the Family who may have been involved in issues in the United States. It has been a bad week in the United States for the image of the Catholic Church, Breda, hasn't it?
It has, and the Vatican did, interestingly, release a statement on that saying that Pope Francis is on the side of victims. And this is after 300 priests in the United States were accused of abusing over 1,000
children.
What does
that mean? Because we have heard stuff like that before. And it doesn't necessarily mean that any action is taken against priests and bishops to hand them over to the relevant authorities for prosecution and punishment.
And agreed, because I don't know what it means. Because it really seems to me that it's a don't do as I do, it's do as I say, nearly. Because the Catholic Church, again, there, or the Pope is coming to Ireland next weekend. He is not going to meet victims of sex abuse, which in itself, I think, tells a story. So they say one thing in a statement, but when it comes to actively embodying that, they're not doing it.
Yeah, and I think if you look, the Pope is a leader of a major religion, and when you have leaders, what they do has an impact. You know, people could argue it was tokenism, but those tokens matter. And stuff that the Pope, for example, has done, people would have seen Spotlight, the movie that was about the Boston Globe investigation into clerical abuse. The person at the core of that was a guy called Cardinal Law, who died last year in December 2017. The Pope Francis said the final prayers at that man's funeral. So you could argue, you know, well, he might be on the side of the victims, yet he still prayed over this man at his funeral. Now, that, you would say, well, he just did it, but that type of behaviour and that makes an impact and has an impact on people, which would make you wonder, is he really, yes, he appears like a nice man, but is he really on the side of the victims?
I mean, words are words. As I said, actions speak louder than words. And again, coming here this next weekend, I mean, it is a significant PR opportunity, I suppose, for him to actually meet with the victims who are actually going to be running their own demonstration.
Because the stuff from Pennsylvania this week has been pretty horrific, hasn't it? It's been a 2-year investigation by a grand jury into all but two Pennsylvania dioceses, turned up dozens of witnesses, 500,000 pages of church records containing credible allegations against over 300 predator priests. 1,000 child victims were identifiable, but apparently the real number of victims is in the thousands.
Yes,
now, this is an extraordinary problem. A problem is one way of describing it, that this organisation has. And yet, the red carpet has been rolled out by the Irish state for its lead man next week.
Yeah, and I think the state has rolled out the red carpet to a lot of people who have organisations or countries that have done incredibly questionable things. I think if you look at that, it's absolutely horrific what happened in Pennsylvania. I think the Catholic Church is still a very important organisation to some people in Ireland. I think we'll see it's still a very important place to a lot of people. It is an organisation, or it is an institution, that has a pretty deplorable record across a lot of things. Child abuse, LGBT, to name two, for example. And I think if the Pope was hoping to restore the Catholic Church's view or their
moral
profile
authority
in Ireland, he could probably take a leaf out of, for example, Enda Kenny's book, where he apologised around the Magdalen Laundries a couple of years ago, about Cloyne before that, where it was a proper, thorough, full apology, rather than what he did this week, as the Pope did this week, with a general apology that didn't really say anything.
And this is in one geographic location, so you can only imagine what that would be like if it was overlaid across the entire world. And it was 300 priests in the United States. And what was interesting is there are charges now only against two priests, one who's pleaded guilty, because a lot of them are dead, and the vast majority of crimes actually happened as well so long ago that they can't prosecute them, you know? So an awful lot more, I think, to come out on this story.
Thank you very much, Breida Brown and Owen McDermott, for joining us here on The Last Word on Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.